What we gonna do is go back, dog. Rewind.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
This week on The Serious Side.
Religion in the workplace. Some corporations believe allowing employees to be their authentic selves while at work increases productivity. According to Working Mother magazine, this means encouraging and fostering religious expression. Magazine CEO Carol Evans says increased religious awareness is a necessity in today's multicultural world.
So we now have to look at, well, what is workplace bullying? So workplace bullying, there are three things you got to know. First of all, it's deliberate, meaning the bully does know what they're doing. They're thinking, I'm going to go and target Jane.
And, I give much, much props to all of the mothers, grandmothers. When I taught at Northwestern, the majority of our kids were not being raised by their mothers or their fathers. They were being raised by their grandparents. Usually their grandmothers who are in their 50s, 60s, and sometimes early 70s.
Good morning and welcome to The Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good morning. Today is April 3rd, 2011, and you're in tune to The Serious Side of the TJRS. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Of course, I'm Jay, and I'm never alone here with my esteemed colleagues. Let me introduce them to you. First up, he's the man who gets the first and last word here on The Serious Side. He's also the host of the GOG Experience and a TJRS contributor. Let's say good morning to the one and only Mr. GOG. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning, Jay and everyone. I'm fine this morning. How are you?
Man, I am doing outstanding. I am really ready. You know, when you miss a day on the job, I wasn't on the network yesterday at all, and I tell you, I'm just chomping at the bits to get back to it, so I am so happy that this show came early, and I'm ready to get into it.
I can tell it. I hear it all in your voice. The energy is there. I know how that is. You come back, you're energized, and you're ready to go get it, man. We got a show this morning, don't we?
Absolutely. And I can't wait to get into it. And as always, man, first and last word, we appreciate you being here.
No problem.
He is the host of the Jay Ryle Show. He's also a TGRS contributor as well. Let's say good morning to the one and only Mr. Elias. Mr. Elias, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing, Jay? And good morning to you. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Elias.
She is the author of the book, Pregnant in the Spirit. She's the host of the True Purpose Development Show. She's also a host on the Jay Ryle Show and a TGRS contributor. Let's say good morning to Dr. Princess Audeya. Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I'm doing fabulous. How are you this morning? How is everyone?
Doing great. Doing great. Can't wait to get started with the show this morning. And we do have one person in the cut, so if she wants to be involved, we'll definitely give her the proper introduction. We have a great show on tap for you this morning, folks. Let's just get right into it. First up, we're talking about being able to express your religious beliefs at work. Now, all of us have seen this. You have a coworker that has a cross up on their desk. You have people who walk around and spit spirituals at you at work. And so, GOG, let me go to you first. Is it appropriate for a person to be able to express their religion or their religious beliefs at work?
I believe it is, as long as it's not imposing upon anybody else's ability to do their job that they're supposed to do, or if it's not diminishing, you know, the company's policies, morals, or if you would, mission statement in any manner. Absolutely. As long as it's not physically affecting any of these.
When you say physically, what do you mean by that?
You talk about, you know, people say crosses around their necks, or, you know, crosses on their desk, or walking around with Bibles. That's not really hurting anyone. And now if you're going around and you're passing out literature or, you know, you're stopping people in the halls, or you're constantly corralling people, trying to get them to come on board, you know, with your religious, your type of religion or your religious beliefs, those sort of things, when you start impeding the progress of, you know, what you're really supposed to be at work doing.
You know, Dr. Odilia, you know, one of the things people will say is, okay, that's fine and dandy, but I think we're looking at this from a Christianity standpoint. But let me ask you a question. You have Muslims who work, and these are, I think their religion, and correct me if I'm wrong, it requires them at certain times of the day to be able to pray, have access to a rug, have access to a sink so they can wash their feet. If you're going to say it's okay to allow people to express their religious beliefs at work, are you then, as an employer, on the hook to make sure that you accommodate all religions, regardless of what they do or what they believe in?
I don't believe that as an employer, it's your job to take inventory of who, what religion an individual has, but I do believe that it is their right to practice doing whatever it is that they have to do, so long as it is not offensive and so long as it does not take away from the responsibility for which they were hired. I've had employees that have worked with me that were Muslims, as you say, and, you know, they were allotted breaks. They were allotted lunch breaks. Sometimes they went away and they did their prayer, and I walked in the bathroom one day, and a young lady, she was kneeling down doing a prayer. I don't mind. I mean, you have a break at a certain amount of time. Come back when you're supposed to. I mean, I think it's okay, as Gio has also expressed, so long as it's not interfering with their job responsibilities.
Well, Ms. Elias, you know, I hear what they're saying, but let's go back. Let me press you on it a little bit. You know, if you have a person that has a cubicle and the cubicle has Jesus statues and crosses and Bibles all over the place, I mean, is there a time and place? I guess that's one of the reasons why they say separation of church and state. What's the difference at your workplace? Should people be allowed to express these types of religious beliefs at work?
I believe if it's at your cubicle, yes. But when you start impeding on me as far as with your religious belief, that's when I believe it needs to be stopped. Because you can be at work and someone could, you know, try to throw a sermon at you, throw their beliefs at you. I mean, my beliefs are my beliefs. And, you know, that's just what it is, man. I work with people who have different religions. And at certain points in time, they try to impede their religion on me. And I'm like, hey, dude, don't really want to hear that right now. So as long as it doesn't impede on me and you're not preaching to me at work, I mean, if you're doing your own thing, you're praying, you're reading your Bible on your breaks, your lunch hour, I have nothing against it.
Well, and see, go ahead, GLG, because I was just getting ready to go to you. Go ahead and finish your thought, and I'll see what I have to say after you're done.
I was just going to say earlier this week, I was funny that, you know, it's interesting that we're doing this topic this morning. Earlier this week, a lady just won an injunction against Walmart for $55,000 because she refused to wear a Santa Claus hat. She was hired as a gift wrapper during Christmas. This was a couple of years ago. It just came to court this year, surfaced in court. However, anyway, she just won a $55,000 injunction against Walmart because she wouldn't wear a Santa Claus hat. I believe her religion was Muslim. And she was a gift wrapper. And the reason I bring this up is I think that when we start to police religion across the board, you know, companies ultimately find themselves in a tight predicament of picking and choosing because, okay, if you're going to say, well, you can't go and pray at a predetermined hour, you say, you know, even though your religion calls for it, that same religion calls for that person to wear a certain kind of attire. So now you're going deeper when they start to do that because, okay, we're saying, all right, well, you can't go pray, but it's okay to wear your attire. And down the road somewhere, we find ourselves, I think, as employers in the predicament of, okay, we're in too deep now. You know, when do you stop? When do you cut it off? You know, in terms of cubicles and offices, I truly believe that that's a person's personal faith. To put a picture of Jesus or the Buddha or of Allah or, you know, any religious symbol on your wall or your cubicle, to me, is the same as putting a picture of your child or your wife, you know, as long as it's not intruding upon anybody else's personal space.
Well, now, and this isn't as funny you mention that, because I was just getting ready to say, when you talk about impeding or intruding, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be something from a vocal standpoint. I mean, if, you know, I remember a case that happened here in Houston where a delivery driver, okay, and it's not dealing with religion per se, but I think it works with what we're talking about. This guy would deliver packages, and this female would deliver packages, and she could see through the back doors posters of, you know, women dressed in bikinis, and she said it offended her, and she asked the employer to take it down. And the employer was like, look, you don't work for me, and so you're here for, what, 2 seconds a day to drop off packages? I'm not going to do it. Well, guess what? She sued them, and she won. And so when you say that it's not impeding on someone's personal space, if I walk in your cubicle, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, let's make sure that we understand that. If I walk into your cube space and I see all these things, what if I'm an atheist? Maybe you are offending me. If I'm your boss and if I have something against Christians, what you have now done, you've opened yourself up to things that, you know, some retaliation per se. So, you know, Mr. Elias, I'll go back to you. With those things, now considering those situations, I mean, why would you put yourself in that particular predicament of being ridiculed or something of that nature when you display your religious beliefs, you know, so prominently in your workspace?
Well Jay, isn't it being an atheist not to express no beliefs at all?
Yeah, but I'm saying that if I'm, you know, I've watched shows before where you had atheists and Christians on the panel, and they really got into it because it's like, you know what, if there's such a thing as a God, then why is A, B, C, D happening? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, they...
Go ahead, Princess.
Atheists are deemed atheists for various reasons. Sometimes it's the fact that they don't feel that there's a God at all, and sometimes it's just that they have no explanation. Other times, okay, maybe they realize there's a higher source, but they choose not to identify God as it is predominantly defined. So they choose not to associate, therefore they are considered by definition by society that they are atheists. But you had said something kind of different. First, you were talking about the guy with the bikini display in his office. I think that's very different than we're talking about religious here. Bible on your desk.
No, it's not. Well, I understand. But what I'm saying to you is that if it offends someone, okay, when you say that as long as you have this in your personal workspace, well, anything at your job, as far as I'm concerned, it's not really, quote-unquote, your personal workspace because it belongs to the employer. So, but what I'm saying is if I walk in your office and if I don't believe in Jesus, if I don't believe in the Bible, and if I ask you to take that down, then at that point, if I'm saying it offends me, then you should take it down. And I was just trying to make the comparison. If something offends you, it doesn't matter whether or not it's a calendar or whether or not it's, you know, religious, you know, symbolisms or whatever. The bottom line is that is it offensive? And if it's offensive to one person, should they then be required to take it down?
I think not. But I also think that there is a such thing in the corporate office for there to be a little bit too much. So that, you know, you have to maintain professionalism. To me, that's just like putting scriptures on your business card. I think that's a bit much. Just keep do well and let your light show that way. So I guess it just depends. And the separation of church and state, that's not applicable in the workplace. That's not school, you know. It's a different setting. But you have your choice. I mean, that's my opinion.
347-850-1272 is the call-in number. You can participate in the conversation. It's 14 minutes after the hour. It's the serious side of the Jay Rouse Show, Sunday mornings here on the TGRS Radio Network, and we're talking about should people be allowed to express their religious beliefs at work, and I think that we have a mixed bag here. I think everyone here, with the exception of me, is saying that it's cool, and it's not. And I'm saying it's not cool. I'm not saying it because I'm not a Christian, because, you know, I do believe in the Father and the Holy Spirit, but the bottom line is I think think that when you have a workplace, you know, you have all people there. It's almost the same, GOGs, when they tell you when you have a business, you know, you should, you know, your decor in your office should be, you know, neutral. It shouldn't lean one way from an ethnic standpoint or not, because what you're trying to do, you're trying to attract all clients, not necessarily people of your same kind and same color. What say you?
I think that when companies ultimately start saying, okay, your environment has to be neutral, I don't think that's possible. You can start with religion, and you know, we can sector it off, religion, family. We can even come right down to the color that you desire your office walls or cubicles to be. I mean, if you really want to go down and start saying, okay, we're going completely neutral in here, everything will be vanilla. I don't want to see anything outside of what our corporate vision is, what our logo is. Okay, if you're going to do that across the board, I really, really think that down the road, you're going to erode morale. You're going to have a high degree of turnover. Now, if you're doing it across the board, coming in, if that is your company policy, that's your company policy, and they know this coming in. But, you know, that goes and that erodes over into what people can wear on their own person. And ultimately, it's going to come down to that. Yeah, I can dictate, you know, what I want or what I require on my walls as a business owner, or, you know, what I want displayed in the business environment. I can dictate that through policies coming in that, you know, supposedly are equal across the board for all employees coming in. You know it coming in. You know, if it doesn't suit your taste, then you're fine. You know, you might want to seek employment elsewhere. We don't get into this later down the road. But I think you're going to have a high degree of turnover. I also think you're going to stunt your business in regards to, you know, being able to attract the best talent across the board, because people aren't going to go there in that kind of environment. But as I said, when you do that, okay, yeah, you can control the physical space and building, but ultimately you're going to erode over into what people have on their person. Hey, I'm sorry, ma'am, but you can't wear that cross. Hey, I'm sorry, sir, but you can't wear that yarmulke. And therein is where you're going to wind up, I think, as business owners working with litigation at the least.
347-850-1272 is the call-in number. You can participate in the conversation. We welcome all comments and statements as long as they're respectful. We definitely would love to hear from you. Mr. Elias, but let me ask you a question. Is that no different than, what's the difference between that and church and state? I mean, when you think about it, I mean, what's the difference?
Really, Jay, I can't think of a difference, man. I mean, and to even press the issue further, what Gio said and what you said, if something's offensive to somebody, you have to take it down, right?
Right. Well, I imagine. Okay. I mean, it's just not your workplace. I mean, I have a right to be able to come to work and be comfortable as well.
What if it makes me uncomfortable to see this? What if it got to the point where somebody said, the pictures of your family are offensive to me?
Well, I mean, there are extreme situations with everything. I've been a professional for, you know, almost 35 years, and I've never heard anyone say that. But, I mean, you know, I guess they could say that. But
I mean, what if they're all dressed in their Muslim outfits, and they're saying to you, those pictures of your family are offensive to me because they're dressed in their Muslim outfit?
You're saying if my family members are dressed in Muslim garb.
Yeah, say your family members are Muslims, and they're dressed in Muslim outfits, and somebody comes in and says, hey, that's offensive to me. You need to take that down.
That's discrimination as far as I'm concerned. And if I'm a Muslim, and I've worked with Muslims, they usually dress appropriately anyway. So, I mean, if you have a problem with my family, then you have a problem with me. And then, you know, then we have to resort back to corporate policy. So, I mean, but I hear what you're saying, but, you know, I'm just talking about normally that's not going to be the case. You have people.
Well, normally,
but
I mean, when it comes to that, I'm saying, what if it got to that extreme?
As an employer, you have to resort back to your HR policy. Go ahead, Gio. What were you about to say?
you took the words right out of my mouth. I swear you read my mind. I was getting ready to say, when we get to that one, Mr. Elliott, that I think, and your point is good. That's when, you know, we're dealing with individuals and we're individualizing it. And I was going to say, I think that's when we revert back to, okay, what is the corporate policy?
Right.
I had a young lady that worked for me a few years back, and she worked for a long time. A lovely young lady, excellent employee. She wore the traditional Muslim garb, Muslim attire, I'm sorry. And nobody had a problem with it. The company didn't have a problem with it. You know, our policy was as such. You know, if your religion requires you to wear a certain attire, so be it. Least of our interest, as long as you could perform the job that you were hired to do. However, we had customers that had extreme problems with it because this lady was employed right on the heels of 9/11, and we know the focus was on Muslims at that time. And there wasn't a day that we didn't get any less than 10 to 12 complaints about her attire, but we stood firm behind her. And our reasoning for doing so was these were individuals. Yes, they were customers, but they were individuals. And each and every individual, just like this young lady, you know, had a right to their opinion. And, you know, simply because they didn't agree with what we were doing necessarily, as long as it wasn't impeding the product or the service that we were delivering, because she was one of the best we had, then there was really ultimately at the end of the day no problem business-wise. If it offends you as an individual, we can spend all day long addressing individuals and never get anything done.
Yeah, absolutely. 347-850-1272 is the call-in number. It's the Serious Side. It's 21 minutes after the hour, about 10 minutes left in this set. We're talking about religious beliefs at work. Should people be allowed to practice their religion at work? And I think that, once again, as an employer, you know, that's one of the things they tell you. You never allow people to talk, you know, religion and politics at work because people have strong opinions on both. And it may affect the morale in the office if a person, you know, if I'm sitting next to a person who's, you know, if I'm a Democrat and they're a Republican, and I'm thinking, you know what, you guys are the scum of the earth. Now my whole opinion of you has changed. And there are some people who are very shallow-minded like that, Dr. Odilia, where they're like, look, if you don't believe in what I believe, you're the enemy, and therefore you're not a person that's worthy of my time or my respect. And so when you have those types of feelings going on out there, is it wise to allow people to express, you know, one of the two things? I'm a Democrat, you know, I'm a Christian, or I'm a Muslim, or I'm a Republican. What say you?
I believe that at the end of the day, an employer cannot monitor conversations. They're not going to get involved in that. That comes in, that starts to roll over into micromanaging. I mean, it's enough on the task to,
okay,
you know, it's just enough. As an employer and as I have been an employee on both sides, I've never known in the most corporate structure for that to be a part, that to be an issue. I'm not going to hire someone and say, okay, don't talk about this or that. They're going to talk, their employees, their colleagues, they're going to have conversations. And everyone is entitled to their own opinion. But as, I mean, if I'm going to allow, am I going to allow them to picket in my office and hold up signs and, you know, really dominate their opinions on my other employees? No. That, you know, but conversations, again, that's going into an extreme situation of micromanaging, and I don't think anybody has time for that.
Well, when you say micromanaging, because, you know, each of these situations have occurred in the workplace that I'm currently involved with, and I'm telling you, you know, listen, as employers, we don't micromanage anything, but there are times where people are back there and they've come to fisticuffs. I've had to fire two people because they got into a fight about President Obama. Okay, I've had situations where a person has reported to our HR department that this person's crosses, they are offending me, could you please ask them to be removed? And then when you approach that person, all of a sudden, I have the right to do blah, 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 and then it turned into a very bad situation. So, you know, the bottom line is, to, you know, you're not micromanaging anything. I think what you do is you put out, and you tell me if you agree with me or not, GOG, on this. I think you put out an HR policy, and it's just like rules and laws of this country of ours. There are laws for people who jaywalk.
You know, but, I mean, come on, do you get tickets for it all the time? No. It's just, hey, listen, there are rules and regulations in place, and if things get to the extreme, then I am going to resort back to my rules and regulations if I have to, if the situation gets serious enough.
Oh, well, yeah.
I agree with that. And ultimately, I think that's the answer to companies that may be having this dilemma. You need a set of HR policy in place on what is allowed in here and to what extent, and it needs to cover across the board broadly, in regards to religion, displays of religion, displays of any kind of propaganda or literature that's distributed, solicitation, and we all know this, the list goes on. And I think that way people coming in the door, they know when they're applying, for an opportunity with your company, your corporation, they know what's accepted and what's not. And 90% of this is going to be avoided. Now, are we going to still see extremes? Of course. In every situation, in every environment, there's going to be exceptions to the rules. There's going to be that one that's going to come in and be that fundamentalist, extreme Christian or Muslim or whatever have you, and you deal with that on an individual basis, backed up and supported, bolstered by your HR policies.
I wanted just to add one more thing. Is that fine, Jay?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. It's a conversation. Go ahead.
I agree with what Gio has said, but I do agree that maybe there is generally, and I know in my office, there has always been a general statement in that although we do believe in freedom of speech and we respect all people's rights and their religion, in the workplace, there should not be anything, under any circumstances, should you cross the line with someone by imposing your opinions or beliefs on other employees. So, yeah, now when you're getting into a situation of there's argument, there's fighting, and there's disruption in the office, thereby causing for there to be a lack of productivity, then you have another situation at hand. It has gotten beyond the point of expression. Now you are definitely crossing the line, and you are imposing on revenues, et cetera. So, yes, but, because they've crossed that line. But as far as their freedom of speech and across on your desk, to me, it's their right, and to go against that, you're going against their constitutional rights.
Well, now, wait a minute. When you say constitutional rights, it goes back to, and this is it's a different topic. I mean, it's a different situation, but I think it works in conjunction with what we're talking about here, Ms. Delias. When you talk about constitutional rights and their rights and this, that, and the other, employers in some cases have the right to read your emails, if it's on a company a server, whatever the case may be. So when you talk about, and I bring this up because, once again, I am an employer, when you start talking about your rights at work, I think we get into a gray area because, really, when does it end? For example, people, they'll come to job interviews and they may have dreadlocks in their hair, and the employer will not hire them because it doesn't fit what they're trying to do. Now, I know how passionate people are about this particular topic, but the bottom line is, when you say you're right, it's your right to wear your hair any way you want to, just like it's your right to do whatever. But the bottom line is, wherever you go and wherever you work, there are rules and regulations. If it says you cannot wear, certain pairs of shoes, you can't sit here and say, well, it's my right. No, the employer is saying, look, because of the safety requirements, you can't wear open-toed shoes. You can't say it's your right to wear open-toed shoes. I mean, it's just, to me, it's a gray area when we start talking in regards to that, Ms. Delias. What say you?
I got to agree, Jay. At my workplace, we wear uniforms. And one guy said he didn't have to wear them because they broke him out. They were they caused him to have a rash, and he would sue and all this other stuff. But ultimately, he had to wear them because it was a workplace policy. When it comes to that, if you go into some of these places that have Patriot Act, I believe it's I'm drawing a blank here, but it's an act that they get at where that you cannot come in with a beard, you can't do this. Some of the refineries that you go into here in Indiana, you can't even have a beard. So, I mean, if you want to work there, I guess you got to abide by their rules, but, you know, you have no,
yeah.
And these places, you have no rights at all.
Yeah, yeah. DLG, I'll give you the last word on the set.
If the employer or the corporation doesn't own it, then they can't control it. And, you know, you think in terms of, okay, what in this environment do they not own? They don't own the person. Now, in regards to uniforms and that type of thing, at least in the state I live in, the law is if a company requires you to wear a certain type of attire, be it shoes, shirts, they have to supply it. At that point, and they have to supply it for everyone, at that point, we're equal. But I think when it comes down to religion, at the end of the day, it's going to come back to what your corporate policy is and what it dictates in terms of what can be displayed. You're not going to control what can be said or worn because you don't own a person. Now, if they get out this, you know, beyond the realms of being respectful, then it's going to come right back to HR policies. And I believe this is what's going to the answer to this particular dilemma that some employers may be having.
Well, I tell you what, the show is off with a bang as always. Tell you what, keep it right here. Coming up next here on the serious side, we're going to stay in the workplace. We're going to talk about workplace bullying. Should be an interesting conversation. It's Sunday, and if it's Sunday, we're talking serious stuff on the serious side. Keep it right here. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is your resident map of the South, Moms and Little Daughters, kickstarting your weekend every Friday with Ladies First Radio, The Gay Rouse Show, a show for women, by women. Tune in every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as my co-host Princess Odelia and I discuss everyday issues and offer inspirational solutions. From the East Coast to the West Coast to all over the world, Ladies First Radio keeps it real, spreading positivity one show at a time. So come be uplifted with Ladies First Radio, The J-Rouse Show. Every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ladies First Radio, The J-Rouse Show. A show for women, by women.
And did you watch the movie The Devil Wears Prada? Watch it as a group at work. And then what you say to your staff, you say, I wouldn't mind your opinion on this. What do you think about this? Promote some discussion. And then you get people to start talking about workplace bullying. What was with this boss? She would go and give somebody a task and then change it.
36 minutes after the hour, it's the Serious Side right here on the TGRS. All right, we're back. 36 minutes after the hour, it's the Serious Side of the TGRS. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network. Let me forewarn you guys, we are having some gremlin issues this morning, so bear with us. We'll definitely try to keep the show going. Right now, we're talking about workplace bullying. Now, I know usually people talk about bullying at school, but to be perfectly honest with you, Mr. Elias, this occurs at the job. People bully people at the job. Have you ever been in a situation where either you were a victim of or witnessed people being bullied at work?
Not in my workplace, Jay. I can't say it because, I don't know, I guess, I've never experienced that. I've never really had anybody getting bullied at our workplace. I mean, at my job, we talk trash to each other, but we don't. To the point where it's like, you know, if you don't do this, I'll beat you down, and I'll do this to you, and I'll do that. No, I don't believe, I'm quite sure it occurs, but I've never experienced it or been around it.
Now, see, that's what I was just getting ready to say, GOG. When people use the term bully, then usually people think it's physical confrontations. But, you know, we're talking about in situations where you're being bullied at work for more of a mental and a professional type situation where people are saying things, you are doing things, and you knowing that you can't get certain deadlines done, knowing that the end result will be failure so they can put you in a situation where they can deal with you appropriately. What say you?
Yeah, absolutely, and I've seen it. I haven't experienced it that I can recall, but I've seen it, and it's very prevalent, and becoming more and more prevalent. You know, as we go forward, you know, into 2011, it's cropped up lately, along with the rest of bullying in regards to people. You usually see it at most common among power crazed, power hungry bosses, or managers or people in, you know, some role of leadership, but it also exists on a subordinate level as well, in regards to, as you alluded to, people coercing, you know, maybe another employee to maybe take on some of their responsibilities, and they do it, and the leverage is maybe that employee is not as strong as they are on the totem pole, or maybe that employee is new and trying to, you know, impress people and fit in, and you get an opportunist, a predatory opportunist that sees this, and you know, therein lies the, if you would, corporate or workplace bullying. Yet absolutely it exists.
Well, Dr. Odilia, now, if you have a boss who's breathing down your neck, telling you that you have to make these deadlines, just putting pressure on you, giving you these looks, is it a situation where this person is bullying you, or is this a person that's saying, look, we have a standard, we have a deadline, we have to make this happen? I mean, what's the difference between being a bully or being, quote-unquote, to use your term from the last segment, a micromanager?
I believe that there's a thin line. There's
okay.
a thin line where in which it could be, it, where someone would actually notice it as such. In the workplace, I don't think that the bullying is so obvious in many cases to others as it is so much to the individual in which it is they are being bullied.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be pushed off as they just want to get you to get the job done. And thereby, it's totally pressed under the rug. So I think there's a very thin line, and it can just really get into the extremity of maybe performance reviews. You've tried your best, you've worked very hard, and then on the performance review, you're downrated. That can be a form of bullying. It's like Gio said, it's a mental thing. More of a mental situation. So, I mean, it's a very thin line, and their border.
Hmm. 347-850-1272 is our call-in number. It looks like we have a call. Mr. Elias, who do we have on the line?
We have Jason on the line, Jay.
All right. Good morning, Jason. Welcome to the Serious Side, and what's your comment? Where are you calling from? What's your comment?
Well, I'm calling from New York.
Hey, what's going on, Jason?
All right. My comment is this subject is not being talked about enough. So, I mean, it's a good thing that you brought it up. But mainly what's going on, especially in this economy, I think bullying towards insubordinate from like a managerial level is getting worse. Because they're trying to impress their boss, so they'll go above and beyond, you know, bullying other employees.
Let me ask you a question, Jason. Do you think it's a situation where now employers have to do more with less, and so now that, you know, the workforce has shrunk, the demands of individuals who remain behind, it puts more pressure on them, so now, and, you know, to borrow your statement, now bosses are really coming down because they have to be able to produce the same amount of work with the least amount of resources. Do you think that's the situation?
Yeah, that's part of it, but a lot of it is paranoia. You know, being worried about losing their job, so they feel like they have to do more bullying now to justify their existence.
Have you experienced this at your job?
Oh, I experienced it, and I witnessed it.
And can you give us
the sad part about it is it happens more from, like, black people in power.
African Americans are doing it more to African Americans, huh?
Exactly.
Very interesting point. That's a good conversation. Thank you so much for your comments, Jason. I tell you what, it's a beautiful segue, GLG, because, I mean, you know, you have situations where African Americans who are in power, people, you know, who are in charge, and, you know, once again, Jason brings up an excellent point. They are the main ones in some cases who's really pushing the train and who are the aggressive people in this situation. Do you agree with that statement?
The caller brings up an excellent point, and I've heard it, the complaints, time and time again. As early as just last week, I heard someone talking about that very situation where African-American managers, in some instances, not all of them, not across the board, treated their African-American subordinates differently and demeaningly so in a way as opposed to the treatment that they gave toward their white subordinates. Definitely an issue and does exist. He brings up an excellent point.
Now, is it a situation, because I've seen this before, where you have an African-American boss, Dr. O'Dea, and this person has both white and black people that work for that individual, and their tone with the white people, it's different than their tone with the black people. Is it a situation where it's like, okay, I know I can say what I want to say to the African-American people, but I have to be careful with what I say to the white people? I mean, do you think... I mean, is there some validity to that statement?
I think that subconsciously, I mean, yeah, it could be some validity to that, but I think it could go both ways. It could be they subconsciously they feel that they can say whatever they want to the black person versus the white person.
Right.
I was just talking to someone just yesterday, and I said I'm very I'm edged with the constant conversation of the white, the black, I'm talking to a white person as if in the minds of the black people I see it very much so that they feel that there's some superiority.
Right.
And they feel that it's a privilege if they have a white person working for them or if a white person, you know, et cetera. And they try to guard that with, very, very, very closely. Also, it could be just merely a situation of being comfortable with your own time.
True.
And it not being anything that has to do with the subconscious situation of feeling superior, feeling as though they are superior, et cetera. So it could be that they're just comfortable with their people. They know their people know how to handle certain things. And a lot of times black people unfortunately, do not know how or do not realize that they can be just as authentic with white people as they can black, unfortunately.
It's 46 minutes after the hour. It's the Sirius Side broadcasting here live on the TGR's radio network, broadcast here every Sunday at 9 o'clock a.m. Central Standard Time right here on this radio station. Mr. Elias, can it be a situation where, you know, and I find myself doing this every now and then, because as an African-American employer, as a boss, as a person that's in that position of authority, you know, very rarely do you see us in those positions. And I'm not trying to turn this into a black and white thing. I'm just trying to keep it real here. Very rarely do you see us in those positions. And we know how hard it took for us to get into that particular situation. I find myself all the time pulling young African-American brothers and sisters to the side and saying, look, you know, we're talking to them like their mama or their daddy would talk to them. So, look, you know damn well you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. Now, am I doing this based on policy? Am I using the proper tools and techniques? No. I'm pulling them to the side because I want them to understand that even though you may think I'm hard on you, I'm trying to look out for your best interest. Now, maybe I'm being discriminatory towards my white employees, but I'm just saying that to be in that position, we know how hard it is to get to that position. And so sometimes it may look as if we're bullying them, but we're just trying to say, look, work hard so you can replace me one day. What say you?
Well, Jay, that was exactly the point I was going to make. Maybe that's this is what we're doing. We're harder on them because we want to see them succeed, and we know that, you know, they got the capability to succeed, and that maybe they are. Maybe it's the fact that you know, we know we got to work twice as hard as anybody else to get there. So I don't know. Maybe that's the case. Or then again, maybe it's that case that whereas that it's two sides of the coin. Was that we cow down to the opposite race, man. I mean, man, we don't want that experience with them because we know they'll do this and they'll do that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It could be two different cases where I've seen, you know, you could see where the African-American is hot on the African-American just because he knows he can get away with it, but you know he can't get away with it with the other guy, so...
Well, GOG, now let's go back to that situation that I just mentioned. I mean, now, even though I know I do that, and I am admitting it for the world, I'm wrong. I mean, because I don't treat my white employees the same way. I don't pull them to the side and say that. I mean, so when you look at it from that perspective, I mean, what say you in regards to that particular scenario that I just outlined?
I don't think you're definitely not bullying them. I think you're pulling them aside and giving them, or anyone that would, any employer that would do this, you're giving them some advice based on personal experiences, and there's certainly not anything wrong with that. It depends upon the content of those conversations too to take place, of course, between the particular individual. But giving someone advice based on personal experience, because you could very well do the same thing with, you know, a white employee based on your personal experiences as being an African American. And give them some advice on how to succeed possibly in the workplace or, create a better environment for themselves with African Americans, basically giving everybody a better understanding, hopefully, of each other and what drives each other. So you're definitely not bullying them. I think when we get into the bully episode, it's when we're requesting, number one, things from people that are outside the realm of their job description, thus creating a hostile working environment, creating an uncomfortable working environment. I think that's when we're flirting with and thus cross the line into bullying. But simply pulling someone aside, giving them advice based on your personal experiences, be it as an African-American, be it as a Caucasian, I truly don't see anything wrong with that, especially if you're not, it's not demeaning and you're not demeaning the other ethnic groups. Or making reference in particular to a reference. There's nothing wrong with that. I would call that basically really good, caring management.
I don't know if they would call it the same because, like I said before, I'm talking to them like their mom and daddy would talk to them. So, you know, because I feel that,
you know,
that connection.
You know, and that's what's missing in a lot of corporations these days, and especially the big ones, because after a while, we all know the bigger you get, in most cases, the more out of touch management becomes with the troops. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that's missing today in corporations, the, hey, come here, let me talk to you
one-on-one type thing. We're all too quick to throw out an employee that may be seen a little amiss, or maybe, you know, they're a little slow, as opposed to pulling them up and what do we call it? Constructive or aggressive counseling before we toss them out. So I think what you're doing is one of the things that really needs to be brought back, into corporations today.
Interesting. 9 minutes before the hour, it's the serious side. We have about 10 minutes left in this particular set. We're talking about workplace bullying. And I tell you what, looks like she's awake. Let's bring in the host of Adamore Art Thou, Ms. Kathleen Williams. Kathleen, I'm working on an intro for you to bring you in to the show, because I'm thinking that it's public enemy time, and maybe we should play Fight the Power when you call in. Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Good morning, everybody. I hope everyone is doing really well this morning. And thank you so much for allowing me to speak again on your program, Jay. but here's the deal. I guess I am the only – I've been bullied at every single job I've ever had, I think. Just about. I don't think that I've really experienced a job without being bullied. And maybe it's just the nature of the beast as an attorney. I think we bully people for, you know, that's just like a matter-of-fact thing. If you're an attorney, you're going to be working in a law firm or wherever you are working, you're going to be bullied. I work in a small firm right now, and there's no bullying that goes on there, but that's just because it's a real, like, close-knit place, and everybody's religious, but we won't go back into that. So anyway, one of the things that I've noticed, particularly about African Americans since you've gotten there, a lot of times what I've noticed is when you have, particularly when you have young African Americans coming on the scene or African Americans just starting out of college in the corporate environment, they have not had a tremendous amount of training or experience working in corporate America. And
right.
So if they tend to end up underneath an African American person, has not only been bullied, sometimes it's not bullying, it's discrimination, sometimes it is bullying. But that's indoctrinated, and then you get this African-American person coming in, and they don't understand the intensity and the seriousness of the environment. And in addition, you know, they just may not be prepared to go hard or go home. So sometimes it may be perceived as bullying, where they're trying to get you, whip you into shape real quick and let you understand, listen, this is not a game. Now, I'm not justifying it, because you can probably do that without bullying somebody. But again, you don't have a whole lot of time, and your boss is looking at you, and you want that person possibly to keep the job. But hey, if you can't get it together and you can't cut the mustard, you got to go, buddy. And that's just what it is.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. Let's go to, tell you what, this must be a reunion this morning. Let's go to one of the former hosts here on the Sirius side, Rob Smooth. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jay. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Rob.
How are you doing today?
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Rob.
What say you, sir?
Well, you know what? I think a lot of people are missing the point, too. Now with this recession going on, a lot of employers are putting a lot of pressure on their employees. And now people, you know, normally if you're in a situation where you might say something if you don't like what's going on, a lot of people now are scared to even speak their opinion or bring up any issues because, you know, they're worried that they might lose their job. And that's a form of bullying in itself. I mean, you know, it's hard to get a job as it is now, and it's getting even harder to keep it because the minute you do something, I don't care how minute it is, if they're trying to cut heads, then, you know, whatever you may do that goes against the grain, then, you know, you might be the next one on the chopping block. I see that every day.
He brings up an excellent point, Dr. O'Dea. The bottom line is that, once again, like we said earlier in the set, employers have to do more with less. And so the demands on you will be tremendous. People are saying, look, we still have workloads that we have to get out. And guess what? You know what? Here's a department that had, you know, 50 people. Now we're down to 20. Well, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
The work doesn't stop. So, I mean, that creates a very pressured environment within itself, does it not?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast today. It's not a very good environment for great energy, so it definitely, I'm sure, plays on the morale of the employees. It also can play on the productivity of that of your employees as well. So at the end of the day, you just have to be careful as an employee to still create an environment that is restful, because it's very easy, as I said earlier, to cross that line of being the boss that's just trying to get the job done versus the boss that is actually bullying, because you're so on edge and fearful of the possibility of you being out of work yourself. So it is a very difficult situation and position for everyone.
Well, look at here. I don't want anybody coming into my business trying to rest. My environment is not a restful place. And as an entrepreneur, I am going to bully people if they are not going to get about the business.
They
will get terminated if they're not doing what I need them to do. And it is, it's a jungle out there. I'm telling you. So, yeah, if you're in a particular workplace and that's the environment, a lot of times, I don't think it's just because of the, I don't think we're missing the point at all. I don't think it's just the recession. I think that if you're getting into these positions, a lot of them, there's some bullying that happens, and it's not a pleasant thing. I saw one man turn around and snap right back at the person who was bullying him, and the boss said, okay, you know what, that's exactly what I'm looking for, somebody who's going to be able to strap it on and get, you know, and say what's on his mind and let me know what I'm dealing with. I don't want somebody kowtowing to me and just doing exactly what I say just because I say it, because then I can't trust you, because you're not going to communicate with me. So, I just think people need to understand it's a hard-paced place. You got to do what you got to do, and if you're getting bullied, you speak up. You don't like it, get out and start your own business.
I think when we say restful, though, I'm not saying as you being restful and being passive on your job. That's not what I mean at all.
Right.
When I say restful, I'm talking about a mental rest where they can feel comfortable and at peace. At the same time, they understand that there is a requirement for productivity, and they are getting the job done without being bullied to get it done. So there is a difference in my workplace, and I know it as an employee, as employees in corporate structures that I've worked in the past, that there is a difference. And you can create that happy medium and still be productive.
Rob Smooth, what say you?
Well, you know, and Jay, you know, you're here in Houston, too. You know, this is an at-will state, Texas, mm-hmm. as a whole. And, you know, now you hear people throwing that around like it's nothing. Oh, well, this is an at-will state. If you don't like it, you can go. That's not even the issue. And it's not even the issue of you being a productive employee. I mean, you hear, you know, I work along with management too, but you hear it every day. Oh, you should be glad you have a job. Oh, this is recession. Oh, Obama's in office. He's gonna kill Medicare or whatever. You know, you hear these things not from employees but employers. So you know, everyone knows that. You know, your job could be here today and gone tomorrow. Now, I'm not saying you should cow down, because you know, first of all, you should be able to voice your opinion if there's an issue. But what I'm saying is a lot of people are getting scared, too, because they're fearful of losing their job, and that mm-hmm. becomes an issue. Mm-hmm. So now you're walking around like you're walking on eggshells, regardless of if you're the baddest wolf in camp or not. You know, everyone needs a job.
That's right.
And management knows it, so they're already on the lookout for anybody that really goes against the grain. So I understand what you're saying, Kathleen. You want somebody to speak up. A lot of people do speak up, but at the risk of losing their job.
Absolutely. Outstanding point. 347-850-1272 is the Sirius Cyber Daily. Yes, we have a phone call. Who do we have on the line?
We have Regina on the line.
Good morning, Regina. Welcome to the Sirius Cyber. Where are you calling from, and what's your comment?
I'm calling from Atlanta, and my comment is this. I am an employer, an employee. I also have my own business. What I think some of your listeners need to understand, in order to alleviate the bullying or being felt like you were being bullied, job security is not knowing how to do just your job, but everybody else's job in the office. It creates a situation where I am an employee also. I still have a job, have a business on the side. When I go to work, I don't have that issue about being bullied, because my bottom line is when you start downsizing, you're going to keep the people who have the most to offer you. So when the lady said, when you come to my job and you're trying to rest, I don't pay you to rest. Everybody needs to get in their mind, you have a commodity. So when I come to my job, I have always been the last person to get cut when the job's over, because they, I understand that when I come to the table, I'm bringing this, 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 and this. So I think it's in your mind, you can only be bullied if that's how you feel. Sometimes you just have to suck it up and be an adult about it and do what you need to do to keep your job. That's my opinion about it.
Well, thank you so much for such a, I love it. It was beautiful. Thank you so much, and don't be a stranger. Please call in anytime. We would definitely love to hear from you in the future. 347-850-1272 is the call-in number. It's the Sirius side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Cafe. And we're talking about bullying at the workplace, and it looks like we have another caller. I think this is Jason. He may want to get back in. Jason, good morning. Is this you?
I'm just disagreeing with Regina.
Okay, well, go ahead and disagree with her. Let's bring Regina back and give you an opportunity to disagree with her. There she is. Go ahead.
I mean,
good morning. How are you?
How you doing? I get your point about productivity, but oftentimes there's a lot of other things going on.
Such as. What my point was is this. That is your job. You got hired because the person at that job thought you could do a job. You can only bully me if I allow you to bully me. Being able to say my piece at a job is your prerogative. You can say whatever you need to say in a professional manner. That bullying is your choice. If I don't like it, if I don't like what you do, you came there looking, you'll leave there looking. So what I'm saying is, when people start talking about, oh, I feel depressed about being bullied at the job, that's the foolishness that you accept at a position. When you come to a job, you got hired because you could do whatever they hired you to do. What I'm saying is this, in order for you not to feel that way, you need to acquire the skills, other skills in that job, so that you'll be on the positive side. People don't get bullied when you're in the positive, when you're in the know, when you're the go-to person. You are more likely to get bullied. So if you have people at your job that are pulling you to the side and say, hey, young blood, you need to learn how to do this. Hey, young blood, I've been here a while. These are the things that are happening. That won't happen if you take in the mindset, this is my job until I get ready to leave it. I'm doing you a favor every day coming to this job. You paying me for a service. It's a mindset. It's all in your mind. This is what I do. And I do this better than anybody else. It was 1,000 people came to get that job before you got hired. So clearly you were qualified to do the job. So when you got on the job, you need to step correct to everybody in the job. That is my point. So you only get bullied if you allowed yourself to get bullied. I guarantee you, you say the wrong thing to me at my job, I know how to get you off of me. And if I'm doing my job, I won't get fired for doing my job. What I will get fired for is not being productive in the position I was hired in.
Jason, you heard a response. Now, do you still agree, or, you know, because we're going to wrap it up here, so get your comment in.
Some of it I agree with, but, I mean, the part where she's saying that you have to be productive, there's been many instances where you have people that's productive and, you know, and do all of that. But the type of climate that we're in now, employers know that the market is overflowing with people that can do the job just as good.
Okay.
So they'll deal with you, you know, discriminatorily because they can.
Okay.
And that's when they need to come see me. That's when they need to come see me, Attorney Kathleen Williams.
Can I say one more thing before we go ahead, because we're definitely running over. You get the last statement on this comment. I mean, you get the last word on this segment. Go ahead.
You know, I agree with everybody on the panel, but this is another thing that I notice employers are doing.
you know, bottom line is if you're top heavy, I've seen them cut people with more experience that can do all the different jobs to bring in cheaper employees or people that are getting paid lower wages. So that's another thing you have on your head. You have to look at, okay, well, if the market is so oversaturated with unemployed people that can do your job and you're at the top end of the pay spectrum, the employers know that, hey, I can get rid of that person and get someone probably 50% cheaper to do the same job. So people have to look at that too.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, boy. That has to be it. All right, folks, we got to move on. Wow. I tell you what, didn't expect this, but I tell you, this is what you get on the serious side. All right, folks, coming up, I can't wait to get into this conversation, the state of the African-American family. If you are on hold, go ahead and hit one and hit one again. We'll let you back. It's the serious side. It's Sunday. Keep it right here. Don't go nowhere.
My best friend's sister, she had a lot of friends, just not enough time. So she got really good at texting while driving. I mean, she was amazing. But ever since the accident, everything has changed. She still has a lot of friends, but now she has no time. Texting while driving, it's dumb and it's deadly.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from Toxic Style. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
A show for women, by women. Is your resident map of the South, my little daughter.
Good Sunday morning to you, folks, and welcome into the serious side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Jazz Cafe.
Powerhouse Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show. Tonight, we...
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
I can say for certain it's true. There's a chance for me and you. I surely feel like the time is near. The picture in my mind is very clear. I think love has brought us here. I remember not too long ago, I was just a lonely person with a lonely heart. Yeah, and I was hoping there could one day be a chance for me to get the love that I've been missing.
Sometimes love
takes a long time,
but wait for love.
Not a waste of time if the truth is indeed the impossible can be. Hold on tight if you think you're right, 'cause nothing hurts as bad as when you see you gave up too easily. Now I remember spending all my on a dream that kept me wishing that you could be mine. Yeah, and I was hoping there could one day be a chance.
never stop believing there could one day be a chance for me to
get the love
that I've been missing.
Sometimes love
takes a long time, but
wait for love,
and you're gonna get your chance
to love.
Wait for love,
wait for love,
and you'll get the love.
Disintegrating because our families are so fractured. Our relationships with our baby mom and the baby daddy and the baby grandmom and the baby. How can we get our families back here? I'm not talking about the nuclear family, just family in general. Just raising our children properly.
Welcome back. 13 minutes after the hour, it's the Serious Side of the TGRS. Happens every Sunday morning, 9 a.m., right here on the TGRS Radio Network. Definitely would like to say good morning and what's up to everyone who's in the chat room listening to the show all over the Internet. Our show's broadcast and simulcast on so many different websites. And tell you what, tune in Wednesday to the J. Rouse Show. My three-minute commentary, if you are a BTR host, I'm going to tell you guys what you need to do to increase your numbers. It's just a matter of taking a few hours, and I'll give you that information right back here on Wednesday. But I tell you what, if you tune in on Wednesday, you're not going to get this conversation, so I just want to warn you right now. That's not happening on Wednesday, but definitely tune in for the three-minute commentary. We'll give you some information. Third and final set is here. We're talking about the state of the African-American family. You know, we've had so many different conversations here, Dr. Odilia, about different aspects of the African-American family, whether it comes to where we are with our kids, black fathers. We've touched on it all. But the bottom line is, if we had to do the state of the state, the State of the Union address on African-American families, if you had to write that speech, what would be your first sentence in that particular statement to the Union, so to speak?
Wake up and let it go. Where
Very
is the
good.
Wisdom?
Yeah. Wow.
Well,
and
believe,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say that there's a lack of wisdom. There's a lack of unity within, and there's a lack of peace within each within self. So it's very difficult for us to have very strong families, even when they're together, let alone single-family homes. And, you know, you have a single-family home, and then you have those that are together, and the entire structure of family within the black race is not consistent, and it unfortunately definitely impacts our youth.
You know, I asked you the same question, GOG. If you had to write some type of state of the state for the African-American family, what would be your first sentence in that speech?
We need to come together and take ownership first of the issues that are exclusive to our community.
Okay, all right. And would you like to expand on that thought?
Sure. The African American community and the black family in general, we deal with a whole different set of issues than you would in other ethnic groups in regards to, and you know, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but the disproportionate number of our African American males that are incarcerated, the recent unemployment rate, where we were at 15%, and I think whites, Hispanics were somewhere around 7.8%. It always seems that anything that can negatively affect an ethnic group, it always hits us the hardest. That's a, you know, and that's only two of, you know, the issues that stand out we're grappling with in the African-American community and families as a whole, and it can't help but affect, you know, the state of our families. But, you know, we have one of the best, or some of the best teachers in the world in our community, and I think it's time for us to stop bickering back and forth, and as the doctor said, you know, start she went there and opened a segue, you know, become more educated on, you know, about what's driving our issues. We know what they are, and, you know, in some cases, you know, some of us use them as crutches. Sure, absolutely, we need to stop that. You know, we need to come together and focus on fixing them. We know what they are. You look at the conversations on talk shows and TV documentaries over the last decade, and it's over and over and over and over again. I just highlighted a couple of them myself. But as I said, among us, we have some of the best set of teachers that anybody could have, and that's our single mothers. When you're talking about 44, 45, almost 50%, you know, households being led by mothers. And, you know, it's troubling to me and problematic when our own men, I hear from time to time, and I hear all too often, you know, come up with these, I don't know, they're just ludicrous excuses of why these women are raising children by themselves. And all too often, you know, the blame is pushed back on these women, and that's just not so. And we need to stop that immediately. These women have gone ahead, and it's an excellent model. They go out every day, and they get it done. You don't hear a lot of them, the successful ones. You don't hear them bickering and complaining about what ultimately is insignificant to the success of raising and nurturing a popular family. And, you know, this is why you always hear me herald single mothers, because they're ultimately, they're setting the example of what we need to do. What, and that being, at the end of the day, deal with the issues, go ahead and do what you got to do and get it done. And until we can come together as a people, you know, we're going to be somewhat stagnant in this state that we're in. And that's my, my opinion.
Wow, 20 minutes after the hour, it's the serious side. Rob Smooth, I'll ask you the same question. If you had to write a speech for the state of the African-American family, what would be your first sentence in that particular speech?
We need to all come together.
Okay.
And try to help each other become better people as a whole.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's a good one. I think that... I definitely would definitely tune in and listen to that speech. Let me go to you, Mr. Elias. First sentence of your speech, what would it be?
Education, education, education. Without it, we're lost. Gotta educate
yourself.
Of course,
And Kathleen, what would be the first sentence in that speech to, if you had to address the state of the African-American family?
Get back to basics. Get back to the basics, because when we came to this country, we had to find a way to make it no matter what. And when we get back to those basics and we become entrepreneurs again and start creating our own sustenance in this country and taking control of our lives as a people, we do it within the family, then we spread it to the community, nation, and the world. Back to basics.
You know, I tell you what, I've been thinking about this because, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, there are a lot of dysfunctional families regardless of what their ethnic background is. So, but when you sit back and think about us, and, you know, and once again, a lot of this comes from watching some of these shows. You know, I watched these shows on any yesterday. I wasn't on the main show because I went to a orientation, a college orientation with my daughter. We visited Lamar University in Beaumont, Texas, and very nice campus. She's interested in physical therapy and things of that nature. But the thing that was so amazing about this visit, Dr. Odia, was I saw so many of my people running around. I see the kids running around dressed crazy, but then I saw the mamas and daddies running around dressed crazy. I said, you know what? This is what's wrong with our community. This is what's wrong with our people, because they were trying to dress like their kids. They had earrings all up in their nose and had their hair all crazy colors, wearing spandex and all this crazy nonsense. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Is it me? Or is it the fact that, you know, we look at this, and to me, your child is an expansion of you. I mean, if your kids, you know, listen, kids are going to dress. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and have my daughter run around with, you know, a big overshirt. You know, she dressed like teens dress. But you're not going to find me running around looking like, you know, I'm dressed as a 19-year-old. And I thought, you know what, there is the root of the problem right there. The parents are not educated enough to, first of all, they shouldn't even have a kid, I think, because, you know, all you're doing is bringing someone else in this world just like you. And we don't need people like you in this world. What say you?
I know we have a whole lot of time, Jay.
You have a few minutes to respond. Go ahead.
I will say this first. We are a very superficial society and a people.
Okay.
And I'm not just talking about black people. I'm talking about us as people, period.
Okay.
When you say that your opinion of why those, you know, how you don't, we don't, those people because they dress a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
That is so superficial.
That's how I feel.
I know it is. You've expressed that several times.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those people may even inhabit some of the greater wisdom. Really, it's from within, okay? I mean, we're talking about what they're wearing and all of that.
And they're tall.
I mean,
you know, I forgot to mention that part. When they open their mouths, they sound as if they have a fifth grade education. Go ahead.
Yeah, and okay, but guess what? When people know to do better, they do better. We cannot judge them because we don't know from where they come, okay? They may be in a community where that is all they know. So we cannot
pass judgment.
Exactly. I understand that. But we cannot pass judgment on them. Neither can we have that type of prejudice, because if that's your perspective of them, then you, as a black person who is trying to inspire them, your energy to them is definitely adverse to your purpose in trying to inspire them. It has that standoffish. You will naturally have that standoffish type attitude of, oh my God, I cannot believe. Look at how you're talking. Oh my God, you know. That's the energy that you're going to portray, no matter how you smile in their face or whatever, and that's not helping the situation either. So I think it's something more that we have to look at.
Okay, well here, let me make sure, because I want to make sure that we're perfectly clear. The bottom line is that what I don't like, Rob Smooth, are excuses. I'm tired of hearing how, oh my God, woe is me. Listen, hey, were we invited to a Monopoly game where all the pieces and the property were bought? Okay, that's true. But the bottom line is there are people in our society, there are people here on this panel who have made things out themselves. There are people here that we know who are very educated and trying to do the right thing. I'm tired of African-American people using, oh, you know, the reason why they're this way because, listen, they're this way because they didn't get an education. They didn't get an education.
No.
All they're doing in life right now is nothing. And you can sit here and say, when we stop making excuses for what we do in life, we'll be better off. It's like an alcoholic. I don't have a problem, but you have a bottle under your damn bed. I mean, you have to get out of this nonsense of making excuses about why our people are where they are.
I have one more thing to say, because I know that everybody would like to say something about this.
Absolutely.
I have been in a position recently to connect reconnect with individuals who have been less fortunate and have not seen what I've seen, have not been exposed to the things that I have been exposed to. Yes, as a result of hard work, but I've been exposed to them. I have talked to a young child who said to me, cried to me, with tears running down his face, very, very creative and powerful young man, saying to me, but you don't know where I've been. I have been around no opportunity. I you know, those things have not happened to me. You don't understand how big it is for me to dream because I've never even seen what you've seen. I've never been exposed to what you've been exposed to. And a lot of the single mothers who are put in a position to not, you know, they're in the position, not put in a position. Their life has it such that at this moment, they cannot move or afford to move out of the hood where in which there are drugs and things of that nature that are around them. So when we decide ourselves to understand that, yes, you've made it, you've gone there, but your compassion must not leave. And when you have that attitude of look at who you are, that is the wrong energy. Yes, you can be firm, and yes, you can inspire and do much greater than just having that.
All right, let's go to Rob. Let's come on. We're running short on time. Go ahead, Rob. What do you have to say, man?
Well, you know, I understand what both of you are saying, but I think one of the most important things about this whole thing is they made the effort to have their kids or give their kids the opportunity to go to college. You know, regardless of how they look or how they present themselves in public, they've made that strive to get that kid in college so that they won't be stuck in the same position that they're in. I mean, you know, and like I don't know if that was Kathleen or Dr. Odelia, but like she said, I mean, that is a superficial thing, and I understand where you're coming from, Jay, because you think, I mean, you feel that them being a mature parents, they should dress appropriately, but that might be based on their circumstances.
I don't know. Maybe I had some mean
but
juice this morning.
But they're making a positive effort to get their kids in school. So I have to commend them on that. So, but
fair
I'm
enough.
Having,
I'll
know,
give you that. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Rob.
But so,
either Rob.
So
mm-hmm.
yeah. So you know, I understand where you're coming from, Jay, and I understand where the other panelists is coming from.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Kathleen. I'm sorry, Rob. I didn't, because I know we're trying to make sure everyone gets a say here because we're running short on time. Kathleen, I had some of your mean juice this morning. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was like, hey, I can go back to bed because Jay took the mean juice today. But, you know, hey, I actually agree with you. I think that with regards to the excuses, Jay, I do think that we do make a lot of excuses for African-American people, and sometimes we start to get comfortable in those excuses. I mean, you know, but there's one thing that is available to everybody right now, and it's called the Internet, and it's called Google. And we can look up what's appropriate for what environment. And even if we don't know something, that's the thing we have to do is reach out and stretch ourselves and make sure we find out what we need to find out to go certain places. And, you know, at the same time, though, they did do that. I agree with Rob. They did do that, and they got their kids out there in college. Many of those people may not have had college education, so every generation is going to go a step beyond. And if they can do that, I really don't care what they have on.
Yeah, well, I give you that. And you know, and like I said before, my thing is that the root of the problem, we talk about the state of the African-American family, Ms. Delias. You know, for me, what I get tired is hearing my people come up with the reasons why they're in the position that they're in. Because, yeah, you know what, even if Google and the Internet's not available, there's a library somewhere. These kids go to school somewhere. And, you know, the thing is, you see this crap. You know, I watch this mess on TV. I watch our kids killing each other. And then I see when they interview their mamas, you know, I don't know who did it. You know, and you know, we not no snitches. I mean, oh, my God, we wonder why the kids turn out the way they do, because their parents are crazy. What say you?
Well, you know, man, it always goes back to what Bill Cosby said, man, and he was right. He got crucified for saying it, you know, and he was 100% right with it, man, because we you know, we're not being proactive about what we're doing. We're not stepping up to the plate and saying, okay, what can I do to make this young man and this young woman succeed in life? What am I going to give them to succeed in life? to make their lives better than what my life was. And I believe that's just the point, man. I mean, and Princess, I mean, Dr. Ardilia said it best, man, when she said maybe they weren't exposed to it. But exposed to it or not, you should have that innate ability to say, I want to make my child's life better than mine was. And I think that's just the bottom line. You gotta want to make your child's life better than yours.
Absolutely. It's the bottom of the hour. It's the serious side. It's Sunday, and of course, if it is Sunday, we're talking serious stuff on the TGRS Radio Network. 347-850-1272 is the call-in number. You are invited to participate in the conversation. We're talking about the state of the African-American family, and I think we all have different opinions. I think we all mean well. I think we all want to see what's best for our families. But, GOG, what I can't, you know, and I'll just reiterate it, what I can't stand is, you know, when you see this stuff on a day-to-day basis and you see us killing each other, we don't need the Klan anymore because we're doing their job for them. That's all we're doing is sitting around here killing each other. And we think it's cool, you know, you're going to kill somebody because they're on a certain block. And like I said, when they talk to these parents, it's like, oh, my God. There it is right there. You know, some parents are helping their kids do drugs. I mean, it's crazy, the state. Now, all African-American families are not like that. Don't get me wrong. But when you turn on one of these television shows, and I can sit here and watch the first 48 on A&E for a week, and probably out of that whole week, I may see three or maybe even four white families who are white-on-white crimes or whatever. It's always black on black, and I'm sick of looking at it. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. The erosion of moral values contributes to that. Someone said in the chat room, which I agree with 100%. We're dealing with a whole hip hop thug culture that's managed and financed by people that have no interest, you know, in our problems or issues when you really look behind the scenes. And as you say, all over the media, you know, and it always seems to make front page, you know, these instances, you know, black on black crime, anything. As I said earlier, if there's anything that can negatively impact anybody or any ethnic group, it always seems to find itself to our doorstep. But as I said, you know, we have to come to the day and the time when we have to take ownership of our problem, realize what the solutions are, and deal with them. Stop using them as crutches. I don't think we can no longer afford to use these things as crutches, and I'm seeing a lot of that. Not every community, not every African-American family, not every African-American, but all so often I see these things used as crutches.
Something real quick, Jay. I just want to real quick. The one thing that you all mentioned that I just got to emphasize is media. And please remember, and I know everybody knows this, but hear me. Remember that what is shown on the media is by design. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's the state of the African-American family, and that means no other community is doing it. You see Italians killing each other, Hispanics do it, white people do it, but what they choose to show on television is African-Americans doing it. It's been since the beginning of time. So we need to also incorporate media in our own lives. And what I mean by that is get your own television show. Get out there. Get on it and show other sides of black America. And that will help to solve the problem. Again, what we see is what we believe and what we begin to imitate.
You know what? She's absolutely correct, Ralph Smooth. But I tell you what, and she's correct. I have to give her that. But, you know, think about what happened with Katrina. You know, one of the things that happened with Katrina, people who don't know this, you know, a lot of the people from Louisiana came to Houston, okay? And then all of a sudden, you know, a lot of them were in the southwest side of Houston. And then it got to the point where the mayor had to issue a state of emergency, and he had to make an appeal to the federal government because the crime rate shot up in that area, where it was like, oh, my God, we are in a state of emergency. So, yeah, the media is a part of that. Don't get me wrong. But I think what we have to do is we have to acknowledge that there is a issue in our community. And, Mr. Elias, you hit it, your speech. You said you'll start your speech off with education, education, education. I don't give a damn what goes down. If they're not educated, we're going to continue to have this. This is going to go on for generations. And I'm telling you, I don't see where it ends. I do not see where this ends. And this is a sad state of affairs. It really and truly is. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that solution is, because let me tell you something. We can sit here and say what we want to say all day long. There are going to be 1,000 shows that's going to repeat the same things that we're saying. And they've said this 2 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. But yet and still, we are still in the state that we're in when it comes to our people. And this has to stop.
And as far as family structure, you know, nowadays most parents want to be friends to their kids versus mentors to their kids. So when it comes to dress, style, and everything else, the kids are emulating not only what they see on the streets, they're also following what examples their parents give them. So
exactly.
You know, if you're like the things that I see go on now with parents and their kids, I wouldn't even thought about doing with my father or my mother.
No.
You know,
no.
I bet, as a matter of fact, I think we brought this up before. You know, when it's grown folks in the room, and not be any kids. And now, you know, they let their kids join in family business, anything that pertains to adults, they let their kids join in. And
yep.
And they treat them like they're on the same playing field. But in all actuality, you're supposed to be the person that your kid follows and listens to, not vice versa.
Yeah,
let's just go there. Because if you're going to talk about the family, we're going to talk about the state of community, we need to talk about the men. Because, you know, Brother Harley was talking about single mothers standing and doing what they need to do. But part of the problem is the fact that a whole lot of men are not stepping up to the plate with regards to family.
True.
You mentioned you did this because of what your father said. I'm in the
right.
same situation. My father was here. And these fathers are not in the family, and it makes a huge difference. So that,
exactly.
again, is something that you as men, you guys are right here. Tell us what needs to happen to make sure that these men will step up to the plate. How do we make sure that the fathers are engaged in the family and stay with the black woman? Let's talk about that.
Well, first of all, before you lay down and have any kids with anyone, you should be
right.
in a stable relationship. That's where the downfall is. You know, a lot of people are having babies, and it's like a one-night stand type thing. Or, you know, they aren't in...
Women.
And they aren't in a stable environment within their relationship with each other. So that's one of the major problems.
That's what
you're saying
to the men, or are you saying that to the women?
To the men.
Both.
Or
I think
both.
It should be both.
I mean,
I think both. It takes two to tango.
If you aren't taking the precautions to prevent a pregnancy, but you're willing to take that risk to lay down with someone. You know, you both should be in a stable environment or a stable relationship where, you know, if this may occur, then we both have to have that understanding that we're both going to take the responsibility to take care of that kid together.
Yeah, well, okay, taking us into the virtual world, but we're in the real world.
Heat of the moment and do things that we don't think about. And that's just reality.
Men are here now. I mean, we always want to take it back to who did you sleep with, and then you know, and
well,
blah
no,
blah.
No,
blah.
No, that's
like,
that's
great. The kids are here. Now what? The family.
Well,
you know, the family's already here. What are you going to do about that?
Well, the man, like I said before, the man that made that child should be responsible for that child.
I don't know the answer.
And I'm a firm believer, and I don't think, and I'm with Jay. I mean, I don't think you can really give that. A straightforward answer to that, but I know one thing: if it was me, and I had a child out of wedlock or whatever the case may be, I'm gonna take care of that child. And like you said, the men definitely need to step up to the plate, and they definitely need to help raise that child.
Yeah, and Kathleen, I just don't know what the answer to that question is. I mean, that's the $100 million question right there. What's the answer to that question, GOG? Because I think that if you can get the answer, more than anything else, we could talk about education, we could talk about everything. If you can answer the one question, how to keep black men involved with their families, how to make black men be men and not be what Cavania Man says in the chat room, baby daddies, I think if you can answer that question, you have 90% of the problem resolved right there. So I don't know the answer to the question. Do you, GOG?
All right, panel. Who's got that $100 million? Because I'm going to take a stab.
All right, well, here we go. Let's see it.
No, I think and truly believe on the serious side, when it comes to a relationship, it's a 50-50 shared responsibility of both parties to make sure that they're dealing with responsible the other one is responsible enough, and I'm not going to get into the whole equally yoked thing and thusly go over into the Bible. I'm not going to go there, but I do believe that, you know, when you engage in a relationship, a long-term relationship, number one, sex loses value, okay, over the years. It doesn't have the value anymore that it had, you know, decades ago in regards to being one of the most cohesive elements of a stable, committed relationship. It's basically a wholesale commodity these days, and I think therein is part of the problem right there. It's often, all too often, engaged in, as Rob said, in the heat of the moment. It doesn't mean anything anymore, and ultimately we arrive, it's one of the reasons we arrive at these issues where we have these, you know, these illegitimate pregnancies, we got this high percentage of single mothers. I think that it's going to go back to being responsible as two adults when you enter into what you term as a relationship. You know, you got a lot of people out here today, they've got friends with benefits and, you know, this other stuff going on, another part of the problem. But you have to make sure that that person, be it the man or the woman, you know, is a responsible person in regards to cultivating and nurturing a relationship that's conducive, number one, for you, number two, for you and them, and then family. If a person's not family-oriented, and, you know, hopefully this will come out in, what do they call it, they got all kind of cute terms for it these days, the interview, the dating and all of that. You know, people used to date people and used to get to know people. And if you know you're dealing with a man that is not family-oriented, he does not want children, and you do, that's not your guy. The same thing with the man, okay? You can't put this all on the women or the man. The same thing with the man. If you're engaging in a woman and she's not family-oriented or she's not financial-oriented, whatever, if there's a major there that does not fit into your master plan, she's not your girl, okay? You've got to be responsible enough, and you've got to have enough self-control to move along. You know, you move along and you continue shopping until you do find what works for you and you are convinced. Now, are all these relationships going to always work out into 25, 30-year-old happy marriages? Absolutely not. But I do think all too often when they do come to their demise, in the end, be it divorce or however they may end, and some of them are. I'm not saying I'm painting the perfect picture here, but in the end, you will still have a person that's not going to walk away from the responsibility as a father or a mother simply because the relationship did not work. We have to address the Ray-Rays and the Pookies and the baby daddies and the baby mamas if we're going to get anywhere.
Princess Ardea, Dr. Princess Ardea, excuse me. We have 1 minute, and I'll give you the final word on this set.
Whew, okay. What I'm going to say is this. Education is overrated as it pertains to the impact of transformation and contribution to the positivity in anyone's race. It's not the institution of religion, nor the institution of education, but rather it is, as Eric Butterworth said, thus the greatest discovery in science is not the outward accomplishments, but the inward revelation and the truth that sets us free to take the outer step. There is a major need for self-empowerment within all of us. Otherwise, we are continuing down a road that has led us to the destiny now. Education is not going to cure it. Any institution is not going to cure it. It comes from within.
That will have to be it. Boy, what a, man, powerful segment. All right, folks, listen, we'll be back. We're not done yet. Chatterbox is next. And before we go, it's the Serious Side. Keep it here. More to come on the TGR's Radio Network.
My troubles keep me away. The week that was in the news.
Hello.
I just feel like I didn't do too. I didn't deserve to have my number retired because I didn't do as much as I should here. And,
Scene from a Houston, Texas suburb where surveillance video shows a 6-month pregnant woman and her sister walking out of a drugstore on Wednesday evening. When suddenly a man who was waiting outside is seen running towards the women, he then grabs the pregnant woman's purse, but she continues to hold on to the bag. She is then dragged for several feet before finally letting go. The suspect runs away with her belongings and then, according to witnesses, jumped into a waiting SUV. The woman's ID, credit cards, and cash were stolen in the incident, but she was not seriously injured and her baby is said to be okay as well.
far from the red carpet, Lindsay Lohan out late Wednesday night with friends in New York City. As the paparazzi snap away, Lindsay seems to take a spill, face first outside the Motor City Bar, cigarette in hand, having a big laugh. Less than 24 hours later, the pictures were circulating all over the internet with chatter and speculation about her condition that night.
In many ways, a picture is worth a thousand words, and these pictures give the impression that Lindsay is out of control.
It's time for, before we go, a quick look at stories that made headlines this past week. And the first thing you heard, no confusion, it was Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman's jersey was retired by the Detroit Pistons. And Mr. Elias, he said, look, he don't think he did enough work there to justify retiring his jersey. What say you about the worm?
Man, some anywhere Dennis Rodman went, he was a hard worker, except for San Antonio. But anywhere he went, he was a hard worker, man. He was. He worked his tail off with the Bulls. He worked his tail off with the Detroit Pistons. So, hey, man, I have nothing to say but good things about Dennis until it comes to the San Antonio Spurs, man. But, yeah, I think he deserved it.
GOG, now listen, he said that he received a call from the Hall of Fame saying that he's going to be in the class of 2011. What say you?
I can't question that Dennis' work ethic at all. He was a hard worker. I'm with him on this. I don't see the retirement of the jersey, but they should retire the wedding dress.
Oh, my goodness. On a more serious note, Kathleen, a man robs a pregnant woman. I think that's probably... To me, that's the epitome of what we've been talking about all morning. A man robs a pregnant woman, drags her down the street. No regards for a baby or nothing. This individual is sick.
Yeah, absolutely, he's sick. And it must have been in New York. I know it was, but that's kind of like people have really lost their minds. And I'm telling you, when we see crimes like that, we really have to evaluate the mental health, and I think we have to take note of these criminals and make sure that when we imprison them, that we're giving them mental health services, because that is crazy.
Nuts. Nuts on nuts. So Lindsay Lohan's in the news again, Dr. Odea. This young lady, boy, she's, I don't know, maybe it was an innocent picture, but it looks as if she was drunk as a skunk because she fell out on the street. What say you?
I say, you know what? If it was one of us and we were out having a good time, the paparazzi would not be all over us. So, I mean, unfortunately, that's not good. That's not a good look for her, and she's already had enough heat, so she should have used better judgment. And if she chooses to go and have a good time, maybe she should stay at home.
Come on, Rob Smooth. She's a young lady, man. She tripped and fell. Why are we making, why is this news?
Mm-hmm. Because of the media. And we want it to be news, but actually, she doesn't mean anything to me. But I wonder if she gets slapped on the hand like Chris Brown.
I don't even bring, you know what? Don't even bring him up. You know what? Thank you. That's a perfect segue to go into this.
That was smooth.
All right, folks, it is time for Chatterbox. Final thoughts from the chat room, and I'll take a stab at this thing first. And I have one from Esprit Radio, and let me get it up here for you. And he says, listen, don't believe that businesses are quick to hire because there's training costs and productivity loss in replacing people. It is from bullying. It's a form of bullying to say be thankful to have your job. I think it is crossing into office politics and power playing. Mr. Elias, what do you have?
I said, I got one from Pro Fantasy. It says, people generally have strong opinions because they are emotional and not logical.
All right, give me another one, too. What else do you have?
One from Gracious One, the beautiful Gracious One. She says, sometimes African American feels that they have to work harder. They don't have to look, so they don't have to look incapable of doing their jobs.
Huh. Okay. What about you? Give me two, GOG.
Sub God had laid down my first one. He said he found out early. Water seeks its own level, even if it's at the waste treatment center. And then Pro Fantasy, he says, the boss is the boss, period. If you want to continue getting paid, that's the way it is.
That sounds like Kathleen Williams. All right, folks. We'll be back with our final thoughts after this. Keep it here. Don't go anywhere. One more set to do.
Online radio at its best. Online radio at its best. Hey,
is your resident map of the South.
Let's do this.
I'm telling you, I am first very honored that you would join me tonight.
He has a very limited time spot, so we want to bring in Mr. Alan Sarrell right away.
Hey, how are you, Kathleen?
You know what? I'm going to make a do with a do, baby.
Man, what's crack-a-lackin', baby? What's crack-a-lackin'?
It's time for the serious side of the Jay Rowe Show.
Don't try to call me out, princess. You can take your love and true purpose and stick it. She's a bitch.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
Well, folks, another Sunday morning, and I apologize. We are fighting the gremlins, and I think we did a pretty good job because they have been fighting me all day. So, look, we had a glitch at the end, but we do appreciate you guys listening. So let's take it around the table. We're about 2 minutes out. Let's start off with Kathleen Williams. Kathleen, final thoughts.
I'm going to say that I believe the African-American family is destined for greatness, and I think we have achieved a lot so far, so I don't want people to think that because we bring up what's negative that there isn't a tremendous amount positive, and work your butt off at work and make sure you keep your job.
Absolutely. I like that one. Rob Smooth, man, a long time. It's been a long time since I said this, but final thoughts.
Well, you know, I have to agree with Kathleen, but first of all, I just want to say, you know, it's been real hanging out with the crew again. And, you know, it's never lost hope in anyone. So if you know someone struggling or if you know you can help someone out, just go ahead and give them a hand.
Yeah, sounds good. Dr. Princess Ardilia, final thoughts.
Well, I want to say great show today. And also, there's a greater truth of each one of you that is beyond the text that you read. So I invite all of you to go within. And remember what Eric Butterworth says, thus the greatest discovery in science is not the outward accomplishments, but the inward revelation and the truth that sets us free to take the outer step. Then we'll find transformation.
Well, thank you so much. Mr. Elias, final thoughts.
I want to send a challenge out to all the men. All the men out there, find children to mentor to. If you want to get your community together, find a child, mentor to them, and let them know that there's a better way out of the situation that they're in.
Well said. Good challenge. And the man who gets the first and last word on the serious side, Mr. GOG, final thoughts.
Hey, I want to thank Kadena, man, self-guided and gracious for the extensive participation in the chat room this morning. Extremely, extremely intellectual dialogue. And I want to leave everybody with this. That finger that you're pointing at everyone else, point it at yourself. Look in the mirror, give yourself a true, thorough self-evaluation. Then sit down and bring that to the table. Put it all in the pot and move forward. I think that'll do a lot with leading you towards some of the solutions we need to resolve some of the issues that we're having today.
And I tell you what, that has to be the last word. So, my man, GOG, if it's Sunday and we're talking serious stuff, what time is it, my friend?
It's time for the serious side of the Jay Rowe Show.
All right, folks, put a bow on it. We'll see you back here next Sunday. We love you. We appreciate you. And, of course, if it is Sunday, we're talking serious stuff. Check out Kathleen tonight, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. God bless everyone and enjoy the rest of your weekend.